Hi, my name is Chris Brennan, and you're listening to the Astrology Podcast. This episode is recorded on Monday, September 26, 2016, starting at 4:25 p.m. in Denver, Colorado, and this is the 89th episode of the show. For more information about how to subscribe to the podcast and help support the production of future episodes by becoming a patron, please visit theastrologypodcast.com/subscribe. In this episode, I'm going to be talking with Austin Coppock and Kelly Surtees about the forecast for the month of October of 2016, as well as talking about a few auspicious electional charts for different dates in October. So Austin and Kelly, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks, Chris.
Hey there.
Long time since I talked to you guys last.
It's been ages.
Minutes, even.
Right. All right, so let's jump right into the forecast. Let's do this. We've got an hour to talk today. So, usually we catch up. So first things first, just very briefly, any major news in your world?
I survived September. I hope everyone else did.
I survived September. That's a good slogan. I like that.
Yeah. I will just say that I've been seeing September as the bookend for a lot of the configurations that defined this year. And it very definitely was. There were a lot of storylines came to an end, and then a number of new ones have been introduced. Not all of them I like. I'll just say that and not go into any more detail.
How very cryptic of you, Austin.
Indeed.
The one thing I forgot to mention, or I should say, is I did record a Jupiter and Libra MP3 download. I guess to pick up off Austin's thread, I'm starting to do a little bit more multimedia stuff myself on my own site. So that's something that's been on sale and we've had some really good feedback about it over the last few weeks. So that's something new for me.
Nice. I sell things too.
Yeah, you do, Austin.
My 8-week class on the Deccans, which I taught last fall, has finally been edited and is going to be available for purchase, I don't know, probably by the time this podcast comes out. I'm excited about that. And I'm going to be teaching a class in October, a 4-week class about synodic cycles, getting to know retrograde motion, direct motion, stations, planets moving fast, planets moving slow, et cetera, et cetera. It's sort of the, you know, your 4-week introduction to synodic cycles and what they tell you about the planets.
Excellent. And we can check out both of your websites for that. I think it's kellysurtees.com and austincoppock.com, correct?
Perfect.
Yeah.
Okay. And as I'm doing the same things, I guess, since we're all talking about that. So, this month, as I think we already know, I'm giving away a free pass to my online course in Hellenistic Astrology on episode 90. So I think that's the next episode after this one, which I may or may not record either later this week or early next month. And for that course, I've actually released separate standalone lectures for a few parts of that course that I'm sort of selling privately on the side, including a lecture on the conditions of bonification and maltreatment, which basically tells you how to determine planetary condition and when planets are extremely well-placed or extremely poorly placed, and then another lecture on the Arabic parts or the lots. So I don't have these listed on my website yet, but I've been giving some people access when they feel like signing up for those topics. So just contact me separately for that. And then if you want to enter into the drawing for a chance to win free access to that course, which I give away through HellenisticAstrology.com, then just become a patron on the $10 tier and you'll automatically be entered into the drawing. So let's see. So back to our topic that we started talking about. So September, which we're finishing up right now, is a sort of bookend to a large part of the year. And I think that makes a lot of sense because we finally finished the Mars retrograde in September, and it finally got out of its shadow and passed the point that it originally went retrograde at. We had the second set of eclipses. This set was in Virgo and Pisces, which kind of bookended or complemented the earlier set of eclipses in March, which were in Pisces and Libra.
So this was actually our last eclipse that we're going to have in Virgo for quite some time, if I'm not incorrect. I think it's going to be another 9 years.
Yeah, it'll be 9
We've
years.
Got We've got one.
Got a Pisces eclipse, though.
Yes, one more eclipse in Pisces, and then the Virgo Pisces series is done for almost a decade.
Wow. Okay, so that'll be early next year. What, like February?
February 26th, I think it is.
Oh yeah. What? I know so many February 26th and 27th nativities.
Yes. So we'll all be able to give you a good debrief about that when it happens.
So that's interesting just in terms of sort of closing down one six-month period that began back at least in March in terms of the eclipses and opening up another six-month period, basically starting from September, going all the way through February. And then, of course, as we started to talk about, as you two both mentioned prior, before we started recording, just finally having Mars, you know, go through into a new, completely new sign, because it's basically been in the two same, I think you said, Kelly, same zodiacal signs for the entirety of this year, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're coming up to month number 10, October, and Mars has only been in Scorpio and Sag, and October, November, December, Mars is going to whip through Capricorn and Aquarius and then even dive early into the early part of Pisces. So in 2 months, Mars is going to cover the same amount of ground that it covered in the first 10 months of the year. So as Austin was saying, Mars is back up to normal speed now. Things are moving.
Yeah, and I don't think there's any other planet whose speed is as variable from our perspective as Mars. You know, Mercury will slow down, but then in a week he'll be fast. You know, it'll be fast again. Venus will slow down and then go fast again. Mars takes forever to go through these retrograde cycles. And it's a, you know, it's a really different face of the planet than the one that we normally get. So we're kind of getting back into normal Mars, which is not always necessarily favorable or pleasurable, but it's very different. From the like slow, grindy, back and forth retrograde shadow Mars.
And yes, and the Chris.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say the only other thing, of course, that I like, and maybe you guys have thought about this too, but Mars is in Capricorn, so we're getting you know the exalted version of Mars or one of the more productive versions of Mars, which I think is fantastic.
Yeah, definitely. It's a nice, interesting change from that previous one. Also, Mars going into Capricorn and going into an Earth sign compared to, you know, the past little while where it's been in Sagittarius and where it's stationed in Sagittarius with that hard aspect with Neptune on top of that. So it's like a mutable sign with a hard aspect with Neptune. And now suddenly we've got Mars in Capricorn all of a sudden. And that's a pretty big shift.
Yeah, we've gone from, I guess, slightly sort of dazed and confused or unfocused Mars to very practical, very focused, very determined, very driven Mars.
Right. Definitely.
Yeah, and so it's worth noting that Mars will be in Capricorn for all of October.
Yes, the entire calendar month.
And that's, which is hilarious just in and of itself, how quickly it moves through. It's like, you know, it goes in on to Capricorn on September 27th, and then it's already in Aquarius by November 9th.
Yes.
Strangely, just after the U.S. election day, Mars makes that sign ingress. But did anybody notice, I mean, that Mercury retrograde that we just had in Virgo had a much different, much more sort of earthy feel for me personally than some of the other ones that we've seen this year. How did you guys enjoy that? Or did you guys notice anything this past month in September while Mercury was retrograde in Virgo?
Look, I didn't have any super classical Mercury retrograde moments until this past weekend when I had a couple of tech glitches, but I would describe it for me personally as a much more mild version of Mercury retrograde, if that's an appropriate way to describe it.
Sure. That, yeah.
I wouldn't say that I observed the same thing. Listening to people and knowing some people's stories, there seemed like there was a lot of super classical Mercury retrograde. I actually got a lot of emails from people who are like, yeah, usually they don't bother me. It's not so big a deal. This one, you know, was much more significant. Mm-hmm. I generally treat Mercury retrogrades in signs that Mercury rules as being more significant. And the fact that this Mercury retrograde occurred almost entirely, not quite entirely, but almost entirely between two eclipses on on the same axis of signs that Mercury was retrograde in, you know, brought some additional intensity to it. It was, I think that Mercury's retrograde was pretty inseparable from the eclipse cycle. You know, Mercury's inferior conjunction with the sun happened right between the eclipses, right in that Bardo. And so I think a lot of that was all rolled up into one.
For me, a lot of it ended up being, I ended up spending like that entire month focused intensely on writing what turned into this entire chapter on the origins of the house division issue in the Hellenistic tradition, which, as you pointed out, Austin, and I kept coming back to, you pointed out how, you know, my original talk on whole sign houses for the Nightlight Astrology group happened last November, and then the debate about house division happened with Deb, like right at the time of the first exact Saturn-Neptune square.
Yeah, you guys picked the exact day.
Yeah, it was really close. And it was like tied in with this whole other T-square of mutable planets. But then Robert Schmidt released a sort of recording that was sort of ostensibly in reaction to that debate and talking about the house division issue in the Hellenistic tradition in June on the second Saturn-Neptune square, which you pointed out, you were the one that pointed out that that was weird. And so it ended up working out that this summer I finally got to and needed to deal with the house division issue by early September. And so I ended up writing my, what was originally just like a 5 or 10 page treatment at the end of the houses chapter. And it turned into a 57 page entire chapter on its own, you know, right around the same time of that third and final Saturn-Neptune square. That went exact around September 10th. So, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, and just to bookend it, you ended up giving another Nightlight Astrology talk on your findings, right?
Right, yeah, which right. Just perfect. Came about like randomly when Adam asked me like that morning if I wanted to give a talk on something, and I was like, well, I've been working on house division for the past, you know, month and a half, and that's literally all I'm thinking about right now. So I could talk about that, but it'd be a not great lecture because I'd have only like 4 hours to prepare it. So he said, you know, do it. And so I put it together and did it, still debating whether or not to release that because I don't know if I want to deal with the sort of dealing with the reactions to that. But it was really amazing seeing that because it was a sort of combination of the Saturn-Neptune square, which ultimately I think became very... a very good metaphor for the house division issue itself and some of the issues related to it, but also just even the Mercury retrograde in Virgo was very descriptive of what I ended up doing for most of December or September, because I ended up sort of Virgoing the hell out of, you know, that chapter in my book and basically doing an overly detailed and overly sort of nuanced account of the first 1,000 years of the use of houses and how every single astrologer used them. And it turned into like 57 pages. So I think I have a better understanding now of some of those archetypes in terms of what happens when you get a really intense sort of Mercury retrograde type review phase, especially when you're like me and you're in a Virgo perfection year where that sign and that planet are actually specifically activated this year. And then you have an eclipse there, and then you have Saturn and Neptune squaring it at the same time to close down a phase that it's been tied into.
Yeah, that's interesting. I also went into a research hole. Mm. You know, what's funny is when I was thinking about the Mercury retrograde before Mercury was retrograde, I got really strong images of being guided down into a sort of underworld library. And so I built up this like sort of tiny mythology of like the lost library, you know, the ghost of Alexandria, the ghost of the Library of Alexandria hunting for, you know, lost sources and forgotten facts and sort of getting tricked by sneaky librarians or getting lost among the stacks. And it ended up being more literal, I think, for a lot of people than I assumed it would be.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So that was all very interesting. So October, in comparison, I think one of the things that me and Kelly both noted is comparatively like kind of boring compared to September, it almost seems like, right?
There's a lot less high-level astro activity, shall we say.
Sure. So no eclipses, no major stations, as far as I'm aware.
No major ingresses either. You know, we've had our only big planet change, sign change for the year, which was Jupiter in Libra.
Right. All we have is some interplanet ingresses. So Mercury goes into Libra on the 7th of October, and then Venus goes into Sagittarius on the 18th. The Sun goes into Scorpio on the 22nd, and then Mercury goes into Scorpio on the 24th.
What we do have is a very exciting full moon.
That is true. That is probably the highlight of the month, the mid-month Aries full moon, which is precisely conjunct Uranus.
Oh, okay. At 23 Aries?
Yeah. Let's grab some data on that.
So that is an otherwise what I would not think would be a very exciting full moon, but it's exactly conjunct or very closely conjunct Uranus.
Yes, very tight.
Well, and we also have a loose T-square from Mars and Pluto, which is made more relevant by the fact that it's a full moon in Aries, which is ruled by Mars. And so it'll look to Mars, and there we have Mars in Capricorn in an applying conjunction with Pluto. It's only about 2 degrees off. So yes, that's pretty intense.
So and the middle of the month.
Yes, dead. I mean, pretty much dead center. It's the, what is it? It's going to be the evening of Saturday the 15th.
Yeah.
So I believe all of us will be at the ISAR conference.
We will. That is true. So it'll be Sunday morning in Australia.
Oh, really? That's the...
Yes, it's the ESA weekend.
Oh, no. That's like the day... That's the day of this panel, or it's pretty close to that panel.
Oh, yeah, the presidential panel.
Oh, God.
I think the presidential panel's on Sunday, isn't it?
Yeah, what day are we talking? Are we talking about Saturday?
Saturday night's the full moon.
Yeah, okay. you'll get a more stabilizing Taurus moon.
Yes.
For the panel. Will
perhaps be helpful. Because this full moon Uranus, then, as you pointed out, Austin, with Mars ruling the full moon but conjunct Pluto, it's a little bit contentious. Looking,
well, it's kind of explodey.
Yeah. explodey. You know, that's a nice word.
One of my favorite sort of pairings of words to describe what Uranus does in both a positive and negative way is breakthroughs and breakdowns.
Oh, yeah. I use those words.
You know, whenever Uranus is really strongly activated, especially when it's activated in a way that pairs it with an emotional planet, such as the moon or Venus, you always have some people lose their shit. And so you also have like really, you know, amazing breakthroughs and whatnot. But, you know, Uranus likes to throw a monkey wrench in things, or, you know, one of the metaphors I've used for a long time is, you know, you're going along and let's say you're playing Monopoly or any board game. Uranus is not necessarily the unexpected move in the game. It's somebody knocking the gaming table over. Where you're like, oh, okay, now for something different. So there will be some surprises on that full moon. Hopefully they're of the revelatory breakthrough variety for people, or at least in the majority.
There's one sort of surprise that I'm actually not looking forward to that weekend, which is it was just announced that, like, ESAR made a big announcement on Facebook saying that somebody, one of the panelists, discovered Hillary's birth time and that it's been confirmed. And what's bullshit about this is they're saying they're not going to release it until the day of the second panel, because there's going to be two presidential panels at the ESAR conference. There's going to be one at the beginning of the conference by international astrologers, and then one at the end of the conference by U.S. astrologers that sort of like is the culmination and the sort of closing of the entire conference. And the guy supposedly who's claiming, or who ESAR is claiming, got the birth data or got it confirmed, is going to be on the second panel. And they're saying they're not going to release it until he announces whatever he's going to announce on the panel. Except the problem then is that they've got, you know, two full panels of other astrologers then who could potentially be working with the wrong data, because part of the announcement that they included is that they're trying to claim that it's neither the 8 p.m. or the 8 a.m. birth time for Hillary that is the correct one. So there's some kind of strange, very ill thought out sort of thing going on behind the scenes here with respect to this. And then there's all sorts of questions about whether the data itself is made up, because it seems to come from another, it seems to be the same as like another source from a guy who's known to be using fake times and giving out different times. And there's all sorts of problems. So
I actually looked at some people hunted down that time. Apparently this person has posted it on some forums, and there's been some discussion about it previously. And it's a Virgo rising chart. It's interesting. I would not reject it out of hand. It's certainly not a ridiculous chart for Hillary, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's true.
I do think it's a little, just doesn't have a good feeling about it that the data is being withheld until sort of the live presidential panel. To me, it's sort of a little bit more in the spirit of collegial kind of collaboration would be if some discovery has been made about this very sort of murky issue, why wouldn't we share that as soon as we have that info, especially if it is as confirmed as it's been claimed to be.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, it's incredibly stupid and offensive from a community standpoint because, you know, if all of us on the panel, except this one guy, prepare for the panels and we have to send in our charts ahead of time, they're supposed to be sent in by like September 28th. If we all base our predictions and prepare based on the wrong birth time, theoretically, if let's just say hypothetically it was true, which I'm not, but let's say hypothetically he got the right birth time, we all prepare with the wrong birth time, and then a bunch of us get our predictions wrong because, you know, Isar or this guy or whatever withheld the time and could have prevented that by giving us the correct time ahead of time. That's like a huge embarrassment for the astrological community, you know, and it's something that could have been avoided. So, yeah, I have no idea what they're thinking, but it's absolutely absurd. And I'm still in the process of trying to get it worked out and see if like they'll release the data to at least the panelists ahead of time, or at least tell us what the source is so that we can see if it's valid or not. So far, it looks like, and the word on the street is that the guy who's claiming that he found it has a sort of checkered history of potentially rectifying sometimes, and that he evidently was criticized by Lois Rodden at one point for not great birth data collection practices. So I think Patrick Watson and I might do a separate show about this later in the week, and I'm hoping that some things will be a little bit clearer by the time we record that, hopefully Wednesday. But I don't know. We'll see what happens. Actually, if this episode ends up getting released after that, which is slightly possible, hopefully we've already got it figured out. But that's something that's happening right now that I guess people should be aware of.
So this brings up a really interesting point, and that is that we have a full moon conjunct Uranus, which on a very simple but true level indicates surprises. And right. Even though that hasn't happened yet, there was a surprise that ended up being accidentally scheduled for that, you know, within 12 hours of that moon conjunct Uranus. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, that's one thing about astrology is that sometimes you'll start reacting to what's coming up. And this is a really obvious version of that. But I see a lot, it's almost like some of these events or, you know, some of these celestial configurations create an event, you know, a month ahead of time, a year ahead of time or whatever, that sort of bends, I don't know, it sort of bends the space-time fabric. And you start feeling when you're leading up to that, even though you can't see it in the sky yet. You know, one of the things I see with clients all the time is people intuiting what things are going to be like in a year or two. This is a much smaller version of that, but it reminded me of that. It's a thing which seems to happen.
Sure. Yeah. That sometimes even an event that hasn't happened yet that has a certain signature or something associated with it, you can already see the sort of anticipation and the archetype almost starting to like present itself before it's even happened in some sense and in anticipation of what that event is already in some sense almost like destined to be.
Yeah. Things start bending themselves into that shape or towards that pattern.
Sure. That would be something interesting to define at some point, like all of those different facets of astrology. At some point, I've always wanted to write a book attempting to define some of those things conceptually, because that's really never been done before. It's just there's a lot of things like that that are sometimes taken for granted in practice, but nobody quite articulates it all together in order to form like a fully coherent sort of theory of astrology that outlines all of the that explicitly articulates all of the conceptual and like theoretical things that sort of go into the practice.
Yeah, right. That's an interesting idea. I'm going to have to come up with a cool name for that phenomenon.
Yeah, it's got to have a cool name. Otherwise, nobody will ever talk about it. Like, you know, you have like the Heisenberg, like uncertainty principle. Like it should be like the Coppock something principle. Coppock, like hyper time dimensionality.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, Coppock doesn't sound very cool. So I'm going to have to leave my name out of it.
Right. All right. We'll think about that. In terms of... Oh, yeah, I did have some elections this month, but they're actually, Lisa again did the elections, and actually we're wrapping up our electional column. We're closing it down after 4 years in TMA, and somebody else is taking over the column in the future. So we just wrote the last one for, I think, December and January last week. We do have some elections that Lisa came up with for October, but they're all actually for the later part of the month, starting... on the 18th. So there's one on the 18th, one on the 20th, then the 22nd, and then the 27th. So not a lot in the first part of the month. And then even once you get to the later part of the month, a lot of it, I mean, really for a long time now, with Saturn now in Sagittarius, you get into this period of Aquarius rising elections really being the best for a long time. Because what you get with Aquarius rising is Saturn ruling the ascendant, placed in the whole sign 11th house, usually not too far from the degree of the midheaven or the degree of the meridian. And then most of this month, especially most of October, Saturn is actually closely sextile Jupiter, which is moving through around the same degrees in Libra. So you get this really nice Saturn-Jupiter sextile with Saturn ruling the ascendant and placed in the 11th for most of the month. So for the most part, for October and some subsequent months, you're basically looking at a lot of Aquarius rising elections in terms of the most auspicious rising sign most of the time. So that's really good for 11th house activities, with some emphasis on the 9th house as well, with Jupiter placed there. I guess I should just go through those at this point, probably, right?
Totally. Yeah. Let's hear it. I can't believe this is going to be the last, like, so you guys have done it up until December, January, and then that's the last column?
Yeah. I mean, I was just getting a little tired of it, and they wanted to change things up a bit. So I think they're going to be trying a different sort of format for it in the future, and I guess we'll see who ends up doing it. I think Nina Griffin might be taking over at this point, so she'll probably be giving it more of a sort of renaissance approach. And yeah, I think that'll be good. So I did it for four.
Yeah, Nina's great.
Yeah, Nina is great. And I did it for 4 years. So it was kind of, I'm surprised I've been doing it for so long at this point.
I can't believe that's how long.
Yeah, I started just after the 2012 election. So it's going to be literally 4 years by the time we wrap it up. And I sort of like pioneered the format, because, you know, they just asked me, like, you know, do you want to write a column on something? And I was like, the only thing I could possibly maybe write a column on is maybe I could like pick out a few auspicious elections each month. And they were like, sure, let's give it a shot and see if it works. And it went over really well. And I don't think that's really been done before. So it's kind of a different format and a different idea. But I was glad to see that it took off and that people seemed to respond to it pretty well. So yeah, but it's really annoying. I'm not as good as you two are about, you know, meeting deadlines each month and getting stuff in on time. So like every other month when I had to turn in the TMA column, it was just like an excruciating week of like forcing myself to find four electional charts. And they wanted them, they asked us after like the first year or so to preferably make them during the daytime, so that automatically removed like, you know, 50% of my charts during the nighttime, because, you know, they didn't think it was very, you know, practical for people to be getting recommendations to like get up at like 2 o'clock in the morning to start a business or something like that, as astrologers often, you know, do. So that made it a little bit more challenging and a little bit more sort of a hassle each month to try and pick out, you know, during this very narrow sort of time span to try and pick out a diverse array of different elections each month, and then to attempt to explain them to a novice astrologers who don't understand terms like reception or, you know, whatever. So it's kind of a hassle. So it's hard.
That's welcome to the world of publishing, or, you know, magazine publishing, I should say, where there's often a little tension between, shall we say, the writer's sort of passion for writing about their material in the way that's most authentic for them versus the editorial direction of the publication, which has their specific audience in mind. So it sounds like there's, you know, it's very common. It's often this negotiation, if you like, between editor and writer.
Oh, yeah. Which is exactly
the reason why I used Patreon to go back to writing a weekly column and a monthly column.
Sure, just to be your own boss and sort of set the terms.
Yeah, well, it's a dialogue with my audience, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like, you know, writing is always a two-player game. Sure. There's always if you don't have an audience, then it's journaling, right? But it simplifies it a little.
True.
It's auteur theory, astrological writing.
Yeah, and I mean, I should clarify that they were great, and the issue was definitely not TMA, because they actually, if anything, did better at, you know, encouraging me to do better and to write more clearly and sort of improve my writing over the past 4 years for, you know, a more general audience, especially working with their editor, Nan Geary. Is that how you pronounce her last name?
I believe so. Nan, I worked with Nan.
Nan's amazing.
She's an awesome editor. She's fantastic.
Like that, and really.
I wasn't meaning to insult the Mountain Astrologer's editorial policy. Every publication has to have an editorial policy, or else it becomes a random bowl of slop. it's just that editorial policy may or may not jive or cohere with an individual author's vision for a particular piece.
Sure. And it was more just me sucking at deadlines, basically, ever since probably like the fourth grade. So that's something that I'm not getting over anytime soon, my like general hatred of deadlines. So going back to a format like this, with the podcast, where it's like me and a few friends can just get together and record something, and I can, you know, do all of my preparations at the very last minute and still produce something halfway decent.
So when is the book coming out again?
Yeah, right. 10 years. I literally started the book 10 years ago this month in September of 2016 with a Virgo rising and Mercury in Virgo election, as a matter of fact. So that was another interesting piece of astrological trivia about you guys talking about this being the last Virgo eclipse in September, and then Mercury retrograde in Virgo and everything else.
So you started it 10 years ago. So you probably started it either right before or during the last set of eclipses in Pisces and Virgo.
Yeah, exactly.
Very true.
It was the same month as a Virgo eclipse, I believe. So anyways, speaking of the book's actually in very good shape, and I'm pushing right now before I go out of town for the ESAR conference in a couple of weeks to hand over the final sort of rough draft to my editor, Aaron, and then he's going to spend a month doing the final edit, and then hopefully we'll actually be getting really close to the final version. I unfortunately, because I had such a huge... was supposed to be a 10-page treatment on house division and the origins of that, and turned it into like a 57-page overly detailed, you know, analysis of the entire issue. Where one of the things I did is I went through every single existing horoscope, all 300 surviving horoscopes from the first like 500 years of Western astrology, and I counted up each ones that had an ascendant or that had a midheaven, and all of them calculated intermediate cusps, and all of them that only used the signs as houses. And then I have a bunch of like pretty graphs and like a breakdown of that. Since that's so long, I'm having to like cut other chapters at this point, like one chapter on the master of the nativity. So anyway, but I should be finishing that up this month. So
anytime in the next decade?
Yeah, it's going to happen this time. Definitely not waiting until the next set of Virgo eclipses 10 years from now.
No, you've been powering through this year.
Right. So So back to the forecast, because we've got some nice things.
Elections.
Elections, right. I was completely skipped over the elections. So the first election takes place October 18th at 3:05 p.m. with about 11 degrees of Aquarius rising. Saturn is in Sagittarius in the 11th whole sign house with Venus, which has just ingressed into Sagittarius. So they're in a sign-based conjunction. Jupiter is over there in the ninth house, the ninth whole sign house in Libra, forming a sextile with Saturn with about 5 degrees of orb, so close enough. The moon's in early Gemini, separating from an opposition with Venus and applying to a trine with Jupiter. So both the ruler of the ascendant and the moon are in excellent condition. Mars, which is the most difficult planet in the chart, is sort of hidden away in the 12th house with Pluto. So we've got a kind of a powerful, you know, Mars hidden away in the 12th house that's, you know, potentially problematic in some ways, but otherwise isn't majorly afflicting any of the most significant players in the chart, which is what you look for in a general electional chart. So that's actually our first. You got to wait
a few weeks. So before we move on, so you have the moon in early Gemini here, correct?
Yeah, for Gemini.
Right. So what this has is we have the moon having just completed an aspect to Venus,
right,
and then on its way to make a trine to Jupiter. Mm-hmm. So we have an enclosure within the rays of Benefix, which is a very nice thing.
Right, and it's the best variety of that because it's actually separating from the less benefic planet in this chart, since it's a day chart, and it's separating from Venus, and it's applying to a trine, which is the most positive aspect with the most positive planet in the chart, because it's a day chart, it's applying to Jupiter.
Yeah, and Jupiter and the moon, there is actually some reception there, because the Jupiter is in a moon-ruled decan, and the moon is in a Jupiter-ruled decan, and I believe also within the Egyptian bound of Jupiter, and Jupiter has triplicity dignity there, so there's actually a little bit more reception than you might otherwise see.
Sure. Yes. Yeah. So that's one of those fantastic conditions of bonification that I was talking about earlier. That it's one of the ones that I'm actually, I had to define in a chapter this month, which is just, you know, when a planet falls between the exact degree-based aspects of two benefics in the positive version or two malefics in the negative version. And when that happens, it's one of the most extremely sort of positive or auspicious placements that you can have for a significator in a chart. So that's one of the things that Lisa really zeroed in on this one. And I think that's one of the reasons why she waited until later in the month to start giving the elections. Cause it's like, especially if you can only pick out four elections in a month, which was the case with the TMA column for the most part, due to length restrictions, you have this question sometimes of, you know, do you want to recommend a mediocre chart that's earlier in the month, just so there's a greater distribution, or do you want to wait and recommend the first chart really late in the month if you can get like a really spectacular one that has something that stands out that doesn't happen very often? And that was definitely the case here.
Yeah, although if somebody wanted to do something earlier in the month, the 10th has the moon in Aquarius trine. It's the other trine to Jupiter in Libra, right, as Mercury is conjoining Jupiter. You might be able to find something using that. It's not. It's got decent bones. It's not as good as the 18th, but it's not garbage if you can't wait a week.
Yeah, I think the only, and that's usually the issue you run into, is just, you know, you've got to start things at some point, and you don't just completely put off your entire life, you know, if you can't find a good election. But most of the time, you're just making do with what you can. But I think she avoided the earlier ones, because one of the issues that we ran into was just Mars is much more tied in with some of the other planets earlier in the month. And that was one of the things that sort of trips up some of those early elections, is that on the 10th, and especially the 11th, Mars is at 9 degrees of Capricorn and Mercury is at 7 degrees of Libra. So Mercury is actually applying to an exact square with Mars, which, even though, you know, you've got the favorable ruler.
On the 10th, you can get Mercury when it's still applying to Jupiter. When by the time the moon makes the trine to Jupiter, Mercury's still applying. So the you know, later on the 10th, you lose that.
Sure. But then you still get both, basically. You get, because that's one of the things I think sometimes that separates like horary practice from like natal practice is like in horary, you're really focused on, you know, what planets perfect first, and to some extent intellectual, you know, what planets perfect first. And if you've got the positive perfection first before the negative one, then that's okay. But, you know, it's like in a natal context, it's much clearer most of the time that if you've got, you know, Mercury-Jupiter conjunction, but then they're both square Mars, that you end up getting both, that you'll get the, you know, extreme aspects of the bad to some extent, as well as the extreme aspects of the good. And it's kind of a mixed bag.
Yeah, I was actually just talking about this in a class I was teaching the other day, the different kind of framework or perspective you need to bring to bear depending on the type of astrology you're doing. You know, if it's a natal chart, you're going to have to live with that for, you know, 60, 70, 80, 90 years. And so you're going to see everything suggested by that natal chart. Whereas, you know, if you're using an election to schedule a party, that'll just happen. You know, you'll get like the most obvious version of that. And horary, many horaries work that way as well. Like if you're horaring, who's going to win this boxing match? Like just one person wins. You know, you don't explore, you don't have 80 years to explore every nuance of that moment.
Sure. Although if you're getting married, then you might have.
I was like, just thinking.
Right.
The wedding charts, I'm doing a couple for some people next year. And the enclosure by Benefics is obviously ideal, but not always possible.
Usually not possible.
Sure. So that's why if you want to take advantage of a really nice chart, take advantage of that one. Other than that, it actually gets better after that, I think, in some of the other charts. So there was one where she switched it up, because that's one of the issues we always ran into the TMA column is like you don't. It looks lazy if you just give like four Aquarius rising charts, because that's literally the best rising sign. So sometimes we'd have to try and, you know, flip it up also in order to give a better distribution in terms of different times, just in case, you know, somebody couldn't use that specific time, you know, four times in a month. So the other possible rising sign at one point is Cancer on October 20th. So you get a Cancer rising chart at about 10:15 in the evening or at night. And Cancer rising, moon in Cancer, conjunct the ascendant, it's at 7 degrees of Cancer approximately, applying to a square with Jupiter, which is at 8 degrees of Libra in the fourth whole sign house. It's separating. I believe it's separating from a, no, it's not. It's completely an aversion to Venus. So it's applying to a square with Jupiter. Mercury and the Sun are also with Jupiter in the fourth whole sign house. This chart's a little bit tricky because it puts that Mars-Pluto conjunction, which is now separating at 15 and 16 Capricorn in the seventh house, somewhat near the descendant. But the fact that it makes it a night chart and the fact that Mars is also exalted on top of that tones down that Mars a little bit. So while you might get some slightly problematic sort of Mars-y seventh house type things, it's not going to be a huge deal, I wouldn't think. Yeah, I think that was about it, because otherwise the chart's not spectacular, but this is the only other chart where we could find a decent sort of rising sign where the ruler of the ascendant was well-placed zodiacally by sign that month, aside from the fabulous Aquarius rising elections during the course of the second part of the month. So that's October 20th. The 22nd, again, 2:45 p.m., 10 Aquarius rising, Saturn in Sagittarius again. This time Venus is a little bit closer. It's up at 5 Sagittarius, applying to a conjunction with Saturn at 13. Jupiter is, again, it's moved a little bit closer to Saturn. It's at 9 Libra, applying to a sextile with Saturn. The moon is, in this chart, just ingressed into Leo, into the 7th whole sign house, where it's applying to a trine, a trine with Venus in Sagittarius, and then a sextile with Jupiter in Libra. So he's got the moon applying to both benefics. It's not applying to Mars, which is good because it's a day chart. And yeah, so it's very similar to the October 18th chart, except instead of having the moon in the fifth house, it has the moon in the seventh house. And the final election of the month takes place on October 27th at 2:25 p.m. This is also Aquarius rising with Saturn in Sagittarius at 13 degrees in the 11th whole sign house. Now Venus is extremely close at 11 degrees of Sag, so there's a pretty tight Venus-Saturn conjunction forming in this chart. On top of that, Jupiter's moved another degree forward because Jupiter's really cruising at this point, where it's moving, it seems like it's moving about a degree or more a week. So Jupiter's at 10 degrees of Libra at this point, and so now it's within 3 degrees of a sextile with Saturn, the ruler of the ascendant, with reception, since Saturn is in the domicile of Jupiter. The moon in this chart has recently ingressed into Libra and into the ninth whole sign house, where it's applying to a conjunction with Jupiter in a date chart. So this chart's very similar to the others, except now the moon is in the ninth house, applying to a very fortunate-looking conjunction with Jupiter. And the last part of this is that the Sun and Mercury are both very closely conjunct. They're actually Kazemi, at 4 degrees of Scorpio in the 10th whole sign house. So it's another nice little facet of this election that you have a Mercury, Kazemi, the Sun in Scorpio in the 10th house. So that's the final election of the month on October 27th.
Nice. Yeah, Jupiter is moving quite quickly this month, covering a full 5 degrees throughout October and again in November. So any kind of Jupiter action or Jupiter aspects that people can pull in that is positive have got that little bit of extra pace behind them as well.
Yeah, that seems like a big change also. Just, I don't know, I guess it's been a while since Jupiter stationed and was moving that slowly, but it just seems like most of this year it was moving so slowly, and I don't know why that is, but definitely by October, because it's so close to the Sun, you know, Jupiter is moving the fastest that it possibly can. So most of October, we'll see it just sort of zooming by.
Yeah.
All right. So aside from the elections, aside from, we talked about the full moon conjunct Uranus on the 16th, there's a new moon in Scorpio on the 30th. So right before Halloween, is there anything special about that?
I think it's trine Neptune.
Okay. Trine Neptune.
So that will, yeah, it is. The new moon's at 8 Scorpio, Neptune will be at 9 Pisces retro. So, you know, in terms of like the haunting and the dress up and the, you know, what's real, what's fantasy, it's probably a lovely energy for the kind of Halloween party mood, I guess.
Sure. Yeah, definitely.
Quite creative or fun. I mean, that sense of not being real, you know, that we tap into with all the costumes and things at Halloween.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it's sort of accentuating it in a positive way rather than a negative one because of it's happening through a trine.
Well, totally. And I think sometimes too, like, you know, with planets or transit influences or what have you, you know, if a planet shows up through a dynamic trigger in whatever particular technique you use, it's looking for expression or an outlet. And sometimes we're not aware of it, we ignore it, and that's how we get more of the shadow or the tricky side coming out. But sometimes when there's an overt opportunity to express energy that's congruent with a planet, that really kind of channels it in a positive way or a functional way, if that's perhaps a better word. So, you know, this would be one Halloween where it would kind of be perhaps worth the effort. I mean, I know for me, I'm going to a Halloween party for the first time in my life and I'll be getting a costume, which is also a first time thing for me. That's partly being Australian. Halloween when I was growing up in Australia wasn't anywhere near, you know, what it's become today in Australia. And even in Australia today, it's nothing like what it is in North America. But there's something playful and creative about that, I guess, that's sort of like getting into the spirit.
Sure. Yeah,
that makes. Is that because you're always surrounded by monstrous creatures growing up in Australia?
Ha ha ha, Austin. I mean, we're certainly always surrounded by lethal creatures. So yeah,
right. I don't mean your fellow citizens.
No, totally. No,
I just mean that the fauna is
totally
both exotic and dangerous.
It's like Australia has, you know, the most lethal, 8 of the 10 most lethal snakes and spiders and what have you. So yeah, maybe we have no need to kind of evoke this sort of almost like a I don't even know what the word is, like this celestial play or this karmic sort of expression. It's right there. I don't know, maybe. We're just a lot further away too. We just don't have quite that influence of culture.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
So, but yeah, new moon trine, Neptune in Scorpio. I think there'll be lots of mystery and magic, perhaps.
Yeah, that's I like how not dramatic that new moon is.
Especially in contrast to the full moon.
Yeah, well, and what was before the, you know, we've had a lot of very dramatic lunations. So I wanted to kind of wind back to the beginning of the month and just look at some of the larger themes as I've been considering them.
Sure.
So one, this month is, the majority of this month is the Sun and Jupiter in Libra. And and Jupiter just ingressed into Libra not very long ago. And it's going to be how it is for the next year. And, you know, Jupiter is in a much happier and more functional condition in Libra than it was for the previous year in Virgo. And so it's, you know, it's like episode six, a new hope. You know, there's like, oh, maybe things can get better. And if you look historically at what happens when Jupiter goes into Libra, people try really hard to make things better, and sometimes they succeed. And so, you know, I see Jupiter in Libra as this like, okay, well, maybe we can, you know, we can dig ourselves out of this rut collectively or individually. And so I guess I've been seeing a lot of October through the lens of, you know, what's going to help that happen and help these potentials develop and get recognized, versus what's going to interfere with that. And the way that this begins is the day before, October begins, we have a new moon in Libra, which is conjunct Jupiter. And so, you know, the seed of the lunar cycle that we do through almost all of October begins with Sun, Moon, Jupiter, right? But then within the first week of Jupiter during the first week of October, I believe it's on the 5th, we have Mars, which is now in Capricorn, make a perfect square to Jupiter in Libra. And although I think Mars in Capricorn is great, I don't like it all mixed up with my Jupiter in Libra. Mars has very different priorities than Jupiter does, especially Jupiter. I mean, if you think about it for a second, we have Jupiter, who's benefic, in the sign of another benefic. And then we have Mars, who's malefic, in the sign of another malefic. You know, Mars in Capricorn is great for like the down and dirty truth of how power actually works. You know, it's the ugly but concrete mechanics of things. Whereas Jupiter in Libra is all about trying to rise above that. And so, you know, I think we see a real challenge to these newly born or just starting to emerge Jupiter in Libra priorities, whether it's to, you know, kind of balance your life, you know, to achieve a greater level of grace and balance on a personal level, or whether it's a collective thing of, you know, one of the ways, one of the areas you can see it really obviously is Jupiter in Libra likes it when people sign arms reduction treaties or do ceases or ceasefires or truces. Unfortunately, what we're going to get are truce fires, where, you know, you have fragile pieces challenged or damaged. And there are a couple of those underway right now. The situation in Colombia is very iffy, and we've already had an attempted ceasefire, an initial ceasefire in Syria fall apart. It was one that was enacted pretty much immediately when Jupiter went into Libra and then fell apart in 6 days. Right. And so I think that's really important. Looking at this Jupiter, you know, Jupiter in Libra is the new kid on the block who's going to be trying to enact his significations. And then I mentioned earlier, we've got that Mercury conjunction to Jupiter. Mercury actually enters Libra the day on the 6th, which is the day after the Mars square Jupiter, and then moves to conjoin Jupiter, which is going to help strengthen that, make it thinkable, make it planable, et cetera, et cetera. And then Mercury will square Mars. And so there's a lot of sort of back and forth between like, do we do like coal, you know, are we cold and brutally efficient, or can we rise above that? And the answer, of course, is going to be both and in the right place and at the right time. I would also add that right now, because the Sun is so close to Jupiter, for the first half of the month, we're not actually going to be able to see Jupiter in the night sky. He's technically it's under the condition of combustion and then under the beams for the first half of the month. And so the first time we're really going to get a good glimpse of this new Jupiter in Libra isn't going to be, ironically, until the 15th, which is the day of the full moon, when Jupiter's going to start rising in the wee hours right before the Sun does.
Wow, that's really interesting. So Jupiter, makes an appearance or comes out from under the beams the same day as that Uranus full moon?
Yeah, isn't that wacky? Well, probably, yeah. That 15 degrees is an idealization. So depending on where you are and what the atmosphere is like, you might be able to sneak a peek earlier, but he should be bright and clear by the time we hit that full moon.
Yeah. Well, then it might be something related to that in terms of what the surprise is. And that's an interesting point. You're talking about those things and attempts to do some of those things, like make treaties, but having them fall apart. And one of the things that always seems to me is that sometimes, when you first get a planet that ingresses into a new sign, especially if it's going to stay there for a while, you get the initial setup in that initial period before the station. And sometimes you have things like that where there's like an attempt to do something that makes sense within the context of that sign, but it doesn't really come together or come to fruition in the way that it was idealized. But then when the planet stations retrograde and then like retraces its steps and goes back and then eventually stations direct and then goes forward through the rest of the sign and then eventually moves out, it's usually that final station and then direct when it's sort of the things that were initially attempted sometimes are returned to and brought to completion. And especially with Jupiter, where it's a planet that only spends a year in a specific sign, it seems like that's sort of a common theme where sometimes in the initial phase of Jupiter first moving into that sign that you get the sort of attempt to do some of those new things that don't fully come to completion. And then sometimes it's several months later when it retraces some of those steps that you get the second and sort of better attempt at those things.
Yeah, totally. Just to complete the sketch of pro and anti Jupiter forces,
sure.
Over
I think
October,
we have to wrap up in like 5 minutes. So
just... Yeah, that's I know. So after right after that full moon on October 18th or 17th, depending on which time zone you're in, Venus moves into Sag, right? And so in addition to hosting one of the better elections this month, that puts Venus and Jupiter in mutual reception on the level of domicile rulership, which is pretty powerful. Right. We have Venus in Jupiter's territory and Jupiter in Venus's territory. And that's going to carry us through to the end of the month. Not only that, but Venus is going to make that conjunction with Saturn, which is usually kind of a, kind of a fart noise as far as joyful things go. But in this case, Jupiter and Saturn are starting a year of mutual reception with each other. And we have Venus as being a very important part of this. And so I think Venus's move through Sag, and especially her conjunction with Saturn, is really going to help. We're going to start seeing what Jupiter and Saturn working together really looks like. It's going to start anchoring the significations of those two planets to one another and those two houses in people's natal charts.
That's a really great point. And I wonder if that won't help to heal some of, it's been really fascinating to me. Like since we did, it's 1 year ago now that we did the Saturn and Sagittarius podcast, and it's been wild over the past year just seeing so many of those themes actually like manifest and actually become crystallized and become more apparent in like the world at large and in just like news stories at large. And I almost hope that some of that isn't, perhaps on some level, like the healing of some of the more negative or sort of more troubling aspects of some of that Saturn and Sag stuff. During the course of October, when we get that first mutual reception.
Yeah, I think it's reasonable to expect some progress to be made more or less up until Venus goes retrograde in Aries next winter, which I think will complicate things significantly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Although that's a ways off yet.
Sure.
That's a All nice right. point, though, Austin, yeah, about the Venus in Sag complementing Jupiter and Libra with Saturn in Sag as well. It's going to be really special to watch.
Yeah, who doesn't like mutually received benefics? Come on.
Definitely. Yeah, and that's, I mean, that's honestly possibly something you could take advantage of more in some of the elections. You would just have to do it.
Well, you have literally have an election with the moon being being enclosed by aspects to mutually received benefics. So,
right,
sort of underscore that that election later on the 18th.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, I think that brings us to the end of our time. We've got to get going. So, any final words before we sign off for the month?
Just a Kelly, quick thanks anything? To all our listeners. I've had some great encounters with everyone, not everyone, but a bunch of people in the last month. So I just wanted to give a shout out to everyone who listens and you know, connects with us after the shows. So we love hearing from you guys. So thanks, everyone.
Totally. Yeah, we're all three going to be at the ESAR conference.
Yeah.
So. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's been nice to meet people who've been listening to the show, and I've ended up reading for some people or doing some classes for folks. It's been and thank you, Chris, for making this podcast happen. It's been
exactly.
Yeah, I think I've gotten to meet and encounter some people that I wouldn't otherwise have, and vice versa. It's very Jupiter and Libra.
Yeah, it's been really wild, and it keeps getting better and better. And with any luck at this ESAR conference, actually, that we're all going to be at, we'll see who wins the best audio visual award, which I told everyone to vote for us on like a month ago. Okay, well, I think we've got to get going. So, yeah, thanks to all our listeners for listening. As usual, if you enjoyed the podcast, please give us a good rating on iTunes. Please think about becoming a patron on Patreon to support the show. We're meeting some of our like long-term goals at this point. So pretty soon I'm going to start setting some new goals, which include, you know, starting to budget money to set aside to start, you know, hopefully having more shows actually with Austin and Kelly. So if you're interested in hearing the three of us talk more about different astrological topics more frequently, then please sign up and become a patron and I'll make that happen. And yeah, I think that's it. So thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Bye for now.